Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. My guest this week is Jeff Wetzler. Jeff is the co-founder and co-CEO of Transcend, a national education nonprofit dedicated to reinventing schooling in the United States. Previous to Transcend, he was the chief learning officer at Teach for America. And before that, he was an international management consultant with Monitor Group. Jeff's also the author of a brand new book entitled Ask, Tap into the Hidden Wisdom of People Around You for Unexpected Breakthroughs in Leadership and Life. Check it out today. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
What's your fun fact?
I love riding horses. People who know me, especially professionally, always surprised by that. I don't necessarily look like someone who would be riding horses, but
okay.
I grew up riding horses at summer camp just in the summers and loved it so much that when I became a summer camp counselor, that was the thing I taught at summer camp.
Oh, what fun.
And I try every year somewhere to get away to do some kind of fun trip. And actually the writing collaborator and research collaborator for my book, I met while I was on a cattle drive out in Wyoming, and she was a wrangler on the cattle drive. And so you just never know where horseback riding can take you.
Literally. And
literally, that is right. That is right. It could take you many places.
I just had this great flashback to the movie City Slickers.
Yes,
remember that?
Exactly.
Because you're in New York,
I love
right?
that. Right, exactly.
Oh, what a great movie. So if anybody hasn't seen it yet, if you don't know what we're talking about, was it 90s probably?
Yes, Billy Crystal.
Yes, amazing. You know, some other great actors in it too, but he was terrific. And good life stories and good comedy, of course, as well. So there's your weekend homework.
There you go.
So now tell us about your 30-second elevator pitch. Tell us about Transcend.
Transcend is a nonprofit organization I co-founded together with Alon Samoa. And what we're trying to do is tackle the problem that schools today in the mainstream, certainly in America, and honestly, really in many places around the world, have not changed in over 100 years. The way that my kids, you know, quote, do school, they go to the local public school where we live. It's almost no different than when I went to school decades before that. Almost no different than when my parents went to school decades before that.
Sure.
The problem is the world has changed radically. You know, if you look at any other sector, we don't do medicine the way that we did. We don't do communications the way we did, et cetera. Only schooling. You know, if you fell asleep 100 years ago, woke up today, it wouldn't seem any different.
Right.
But kids need all kinds of different skills than they needed when the main purpose of school was to get people ready to go into factories.
Right.
Kids need to be able to communicate, as we're talking about. They need to think critically. They need to be leaders. We need our kids to solve the biggest challenges we've got in our country and our world today. But schools, by and large, were not designed to do that. They were designed really to get kids to sit down, shut up, listen, follow directions, be compliant. And that is not going to serve kids today. It's not going to serve our country. It's not going to serve our world. And so we need to fundamentally rethink the way that schools work. And our organization, we consider ourselves an R&D organization, research and development, to support school communities to do the kind of innovative design thinking that we see in every other industry except for schooling. So we work across the country and we help school principals, school communities, parents, teachers, et cetera, come together and say, what do we want for our kids? What do we want them to be able to know, be able to do? What kinds of skills, values, et cetera, do we want to develop? And what does that mean for how we need to rethink everything from the use of time, to the use of space, to the content, to the way we do assessment, to even roles that we have, to partnerships that we have with employers, et cetera, to be building the kinds of learning environments that will really enable all kids to thrive for the 21st century.
Amazing. And I think everybody else who has ever sat through junior high school can say, yeah, I would have liked that to be different.
Yes, me too. Exactly. It works for almost no one.
Yes, there's something awful about it. And when you're in that stage, of course, your work, of course, is beyond just middle school. But for some reason, that's always seems to be the era that the world wishes they could just erase out of history.
It is true. It's important for me to say, by the way, this is not the fault of teachers.
No.
Teachers are trapped inside this industrial model of school just the same way the kids are as well. And it's a tough role for everyone, whether you're the adult or the kid in the situation.
There's so many competing factors. And many of you out there know that in my former life, I was a public school teacher. Mm-hmm. I taught elementary. I taught high school. I taught inner cities. I did, smartly for me at least, and luckily for the students, skip over the junior high school phase, but as far as teaching is concerned. But yeah, no, there's so many things that you are just trapped into that no matter how innovative you want to be, it's really hard to do that and still fit within standardized curriculum of sorts.
Exactly. Sometimes we would say, you know, if we were talking about medicine and we were saying to a doctor, you have to be the general practitioner and the nurse and clean up and the x-ray technician and invent the drugs and see 30 patients at the same time. would that work? And of course, we would say, no, that's not how you organize things for optimal success. But that's kind of what we're saying to teachers and schools. And so that's part of what we're trying to reinvent.
Yeah. So in doing all of this and in trying to reinvent, it's certainly not a wheel, it's like reinventing the jet plane of some sort. So what's the most important leadership communication lesson you had to learn? And how did you learn it?
Yeah, I would say that this lesson I've learned even beyond the context of the work I do at Transcend, even before that. But one of my favorite quotes about communication, and I think this applies to leadership and communication in general, comes from George Bernard Shaw, who said, the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has even taken place.
Yes.
It's interesting because it goes in both directions. I think as a leader, when I think I've communicated something, it may not have actually landed or sunk in with the other person.
Yes.
But similarly, and this is really what I focus my book on, is so often the people around us are thinking and feeling incredibly important things, insights, ideas, feedback for us, perspectives, et cetera. And that communication is not happening to us. Yeah, I think it's particularly hard for leaders in any kind of position of authority because people may not feel safe to actually share the things that they're thinking and feeling. But I actually think it's equally applicable to people at any level in the organization, including more junior people who may not be getting the kinds of feedback or coaching or guidance that would help them be most successful and grow.
Yes.
And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about that. It shows up for me in all kinds of different ways as a leader. You know, as someone who manages people across the organization, I often will have one person say to me some challenge that they're having with another person. And I say to them, have you said that to the other person? And they said, well, not exactly.
Yes.
How would you expect them to actually know and be able to do something about that?
Yes.
And if you were in their position, would you want that to be said to you? Of course I would want that to be said to me. And yet this person who's not getting that information is walking around in the dark thinking that all the communication that they possibly need has actually happened to them.
Yes.
So it happens all the time. I mean, I remember also being, I sit on a number of boards and I was talking to one board member who was basically exiting the board because they were completely frustrated with the way that the CEO was managing the organization. And I said, do you think the CEO has any idea as to why you are leaving? And they said, absolutely not. I can never tell them that. And they said, yeah, I'm even a direct person, but they would not react well. And I don't want to have to deal with that. Mm. And so I see it everywhere. And it happens to me too, as well. I remember one situation where this was actually in my prior organization, Teach for America. I was leading a big team that was working on intensive training for our teachers.
Yes.
And we did those over the summer. And just before one of our big institutes was about to kick off, I discovered that there were a ton of things that were not in place and that were not ready for, you know, hundreds of teachers who were about to get trained to be put into really challenging classrooms. And all throughout the year, I thought we were having communication. I thought I was asking questions. I thought I was asking the right questions.
Sure.
And I thought I was getting information. And what I discovered far too late is that the challenges that were going on, the team was not sharing them with me and didn't feel comfortable. And they thought, I need to make sure Jeff just has confidence in me and thinks that I'm doing my best. And they were doing their best. But there were so many ways that I could have actually helped had I known. And I take the responsibility for that. I think that's the role of a leader, is to actually really get curious about what do I not know, really make it safe for other people to share, really ask the right questions, and then listen for both what's said and for what's unsaid. And thankfully, in that situation, we were able to, you know, some heroic leader stepped up and really helped us pull it all together. And it went smoothly for the teachers. But I'll never forget that, because the moment that I got that realization that I was not really hearing what was going on, I started asking myself, what else am I not hearing? What else might people not be telling to me? And that really motivated me. And that was a huge genesis of the book, which is all about how do we actually tap into what people may not be saying, but would be very beneficial for us to know.
Absolutely. And I love that your reaction upon realizing you've missed some major cues, some major data, some major whatever else, that there's this kind of behind the scenes, I won't call it unionized, but at least trend or culture of, we're not telling Jeff what we really think. That's not the kind of culture that's going to help an organization thrive, even grow for that matter. So that you have the grace to be able to receive that. Now, I don't know what your immediate thought, what if there was any defensiveness or any, wait a minute, but I'm trying to do my best and you, how am I supposed to know? You know, we all have those, but that you were able to say objectively, okay, if I miss that, what else am I missing? I need to find out. And not in an inquisition kind of way. This is not trying to ferret out, you know, who else is holding back on whatever else in a defensive way. We need to know. Help me help you. Help me make this a better organization. You know, I need your input. How do we create the safety to do this? I missed the boat. I own it. I'm not going to run away or get all freaked out about it. But glad I know that now.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's so hard for leaders to do when the ego and the, you've got to go the Brene Brown direction, the shame, like, is it my fault? Do you hate me? Am I a failure of a leader? Are you going to not respect me if I admit that I've missed this gigantic thing? You know, how do I save face? You know, there's all this head trash that gets in our way from being able to just sit back and receive and say, okay, need to figure out what to do about this because this is clearly not a sustainable direction. I'm not a bad person for having missed it. I just missed it. So let's fill it in, redirect, and move forward in a much more helpful, productive, and hopefully constructive way.
Exactly. I mean, admittedly, my first reaction was panic. Like, oh my God, is this thing going to implode? And I was trying to picture, what if we have hundreds of teachers who are not prepared? And so there was all of that emotional flooding. But once I was able to get back to that, I did get curious. And the question that I was really most curious about is, how was I complicit in my own unawareness of what was going on? Mm. What were the ways in which I was actually making it harder for people to tell me this or making it harder for myself to hear this?
Yeah.
And when you have that level of curiosity, then it's actually natural and you kind of want to ask the question, what did I do to make it harder? And what could I do to make it easier for you as well? And as I started to reflect on that with some of my senior leaders on my team, they really helped me to become much more sensitive to the power of my position, particularly in education, which I think can be a hierarchical kind of culture. The ways in which even just the positionality can silence people and all of the things that need to go on to overcome that silencing.
Yes.
Was a lot of what I learned the hard way.
It is so difficult. And it's interesting when I'm onboarding or exploring possible coaching with a new client. And if their senior leader comes and says, hey, Laura, I'd like you to work with VP so-and-so or whoever it is. And here's what they need. And here's the problem. And here's the challenges. One of the questions I have to ask them is, well, have you told them what you just told me? And very often I get the hedged, well, yeah, mostly.
Right, right.
Okay, so everything that matters is in the part that's not included in that mostly. What was left out in that Venn diagram? What's in that peripheral little crescent? That's what's going to make the difference. And so we often need to have a little three-way powwow just saying, okay, so let's talk and let's make sure that we're all defining our terms the same way. Because when you talk about executive presence or you talk about needing to be quote unquote a better communicator, let's understand that. And what's at stake?
Yes, exactly.
What's at stake here? Because it's one thing to say, you know, you should improve on this and we'd like you to you know, strengthen these particular skills. And they go, okay. But if they don't understand what's at stake, if you're telling me it's as a career derailer, they will
exactly.
not be eligible for promotion. They will not be seen as ready for any of these other things unless and they don't know that. They just think this is a nice little benefit. Okay, everybody gets coaching and something. No, this is major. If you don't make them understand that, why are we doing this? I have learned the hard way, fortunately, only once, that unless that conversation takes place, I'm not willing to accept the engagement because you're setting all of us up for failure. And that's a waste of everybody's time and money and everything else. So
exactly.
No, got to have it. I think that's so important.
I learned a term for this that has really stuck with me in my very first, when I worked at Monitor, and I had the great fortune to work under and alongside some incredible thought leaders in this space, people like Diana Smith and Chris Argyris. And they did an exercise with us as part of our training where they would say to each of us, and this was in a kind of a small group setting, take out a piece of paper and draw a line down the paper. Now on the right side of the piece of paper, I want you to recount a challenging conversation that you had line by line, almost like you're writing the script of a play. Mm. So I said this, she said this, I said this, she said this, et cetera. It's great. Okay, now we know what was said. Now on the left-hand side, I want you to write down all of your unspoken thoughts and feelings that you were having during that conversation that never came across. And so in our organization, the term left-hand column became very much known as this is the unspoken set of thoughts and feelings that's going on. This is the actual stuff that doesn't actually get communicated. Sometimes there's some crap in there that should never get communicated.
Sure.
But there is almost always some gems that need to get communicated, yeah. Like what you just said, like the fact that what's at stake here is your career progression, et cetera. And so in that organization, it was helpful to be able to have the term the left-hand column because people could say, you know what, let me just share what's in my left-hand column now, or what, you know, what's going through your left-hand column at this point in time. It normalized that, but it also helped me to remember that in my conversations, everyone else, just like I do, has a left-hand column.
Yep.
And so remembering that can get you curious and say, what is the thing that might not have yet been said? And often it's not the first thing that gets said. There's, you know, the deeper reasons. And then we worked a lot on how do you get the skills to really make that easier for people to share with you what's in their left-hand column.
Yeah. So I love that. And I like when we get to have these sort of code words of sorts, the safe word, as it were.
Yes.
So the left-hand column, what's in your left-hand column? That means, okay, now let's be open with me. I'm giving you space. I want to know, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt and presuming that there's more to it that you haven't perhaps either consciously articulated mm-hmm. for yourself mm-hmm. or not quite figuring out how to work this part in. There's hesitation. So I'm giving you the space and the latitude to say what you might otherwise be hesitant to say. Did you ever watch the show Ted Lasso?
Oh, it is one of my very favorite shows. And there's so much to do with questions and curiosity in Ted Lasso. But what were you thinking?
The specific one, there was an episode, and anybody out there was on, I think it's Apple TV.
That's right.
So if you can get like a free 3-month trial subscription, just binge Ted Lasso. You will not regret it. But there's an episode where he's talking about how he was going through marriage counseling and whatnot. The therapist had given them the safe word of Oklahoma.
Yes.
And when he and his wife were having a conversation, if one said to the other, Oklahoma, that means unvarnished. You got to tell me point blank exactly what you're thinking and feeling. No holding back, just to be nice and hide and do whatever else. So, and of course, he took that in a hysterical direction. So I strongly recommend watching that, or at least go and YouTube the Oklahoma Ted Lasso, and you'll see a great conversation that he's having with his boss where that kind of comes up and you just burst out laughing. So Oklahoma or left-hand column or Lucky Charms or whatever you want to come up with that keyword that's an easy, safe word for your team that means giving each other the benefit of the doubt. This is your safe space to share what you might be holding back on. How does that sound as a tactic, Jeff?
I love it. I love it. Yes. And it's part of the research for the book. I really delved deep into this question of what does it take to make it safe? And it's not just enough to request that people tell you what's in their left-hand column.
Yes.
Particularly when there's any dynamics of power or difference at play as well.
Yes.
You've got to also let them know that you can handle it as well.
Yes.
I talk about it in the term of radiate resilience. You've got to be able to say to them, I know it might be hard for me to hear this, but I promise you, I'm not going to take it personally. I just really need to know. And the whole idea is that you can have your emotional reactions, but you're not going to hold the other person responsible for them. You're going to take responsibility for it. And when you do that, then people are much more able to trust that they can actually share those kinds of things. Of course, it also helps to start by yourself opening up and sharing what's in your own left-hand column too.
Yes. And the power differential, oh my gosh, you just can't overemphasize the effect that that can have on all the unspoken stuff that what people read in. I used to teach grad school over at the University of Pennsylvania, and I realized at one point that my thinking face was, you know, I'd scrunch my eyebrows down and kind of, you know, wrinkle them up a little bit. And it just meant I was concentrating. Not that I was angry, not whatever else, but people would often misinterpret that. And so one day I had invited one of my students to office hours so I could help her with her paper because I knew she was struggling with her research. And again, this is just an invitation. We had a perfectly good relationship. There was no problem. I just like, come on, I'll give you a little bit of help. And she comes in, she sits down, hands me her draft. And I started to look at it and I caught myself. And I said to her, by the way, if as I'm reading, you see my face kind of do this, and my eyebrows do this, just know I'm not angry. I'm just concentrating. And she slumped back in her chair, put her hand to her forehead and said, oh, thank God, I was so scared. And I was like, oh my gosh.
It's so great to have that self-awareness.
Yes. Yeah. And I scared her. She just confessed. I was so scared. I didn't do anything. I didn't, you know, I was trying to help her. It was all under benevolence, but all my eyebrows did was just knit together a little bit. And she went into panic mode. I thought, oh my gosh, the nonverbal power dynamic implications and interpretations and all that kind of stuff. We have to be responsible for
exactly,
that as leaders.
Exactly. Well said.
So I think this is a good time to challenge our listeners okay. to increase that awareness somehow or other. So time for our listener 24-hour influence challenge. Jeff, how would you like to challenge our listeners today to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence?
So if we connect it to the question of how do you actually learn from other people what they might not otherwise be telling you, what's in their left-hand column, one of the most important steps to that is actually listening to what they have to say. And so often we think we're good at listening, but we are actually not that good at listening. In the research I did for the book, I actually had this fascinating conversation with a journalist named Jenny West Anderson. And she was saying to me that she still records the interviews whenever she can of the people that she interviews for her journalism. And she will then listen to them over and over again afterwards. And every time she listens to them, she hears so much that she hadn't heard the previous time. And so it, to me, was just such a beautiful illustration of the fact that we think we're hearing it, but there's so much more going on that we're not hearing. One of the things that can get in the way of us really hearing is the natural tendency that we have when we hear something from someone to relate it back to ourselves. So you might tell me something, well, that reminds me of when I went horseback riding, et cetera.
Yep.
But when we do that, we're doing something that is essentially what I refer to as bringing it back to ourselves, back to self-listening. And I learned a version of this from a woman named Debbie Irving. And the acronym that I now remember is BS listening. When someone is telling us something and we immediately bring it back to ourselves, it has the effect, A, of really taking our presence away from the other person, but also pretty quickly sending the message to the other person, I'm done listening to you because I'm taking it back to myself. And so the challenge for all of us is to practice no BS listening. That when someone shares something with you, resist the temptation to immediately take it back to yourself. And instead, either just sit there and listen or challenge yourself, how can I ask 3 follow-up questions? And those follow-up questions could be anything from, what do you mean when you say that? Or did I hear you correctly? Or what leads you to believe that? Or tell me more about any number of follow-up questions. But resist the BS, bringing it back to yourself.
Yes, I love the acronym, the BS listening, back self. And there's, of course, a fine line we want to share. And I think in some ways, there's a very natural tendency to want to show similarity, to want to show connection, to want to show, I understand what you're saying. I've had a similar experience, that empathy point of connection. And there's a time and a place for that.
Absolutely.
But to what extent do we just habitually turn it around and make it about us and then go off on some long tangent as opposed to just exploring a little deeper? If you want to go back to referring to yourself at some point and sharing your own story as well, even just hold off. Ask a few additional questions first. Don't make that the first thing out of your mouth. Oh yeah, me too.
Exactly. And part of the reason is that the first thing that someone will say to you is often not the most important thing they have to say. And as they share, they will be asking themselves, does this person really care? Do they really want to know? Should I say the real thing or not? And the moment we go to BS listening, that just cuts off that possibility.
Yes. All right. Everybody's out there. No more BS listening. Got it? Good. Now, Jeff, tell me this. Finish the sentence for me. I wish I was better at explaining what to whom.
So many things. So back to my work at Transcend. In our work where we are supporting communities to reimagine schools, a constant challenge for me and many of us who are trying to do this work is to really explain what does it mean to actually reimagine, redesign, transform schools. It's hard to convey for a couple of reasons, and I feel dissatisfied with my own ability to really convey it in all the ways that I want to. Part of the reason why I find it challenging is that when people think of school, because we've all been so conditioned to think about this is what school is, it's the desks, it's the rows, it's the sitting straight, it's the getting good grade, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's hard to even conjure up what it could be that's different. And then it's also hard for me to describe the process by which communities come together while simultaneously running school today and reimagining what it could be. And it's a really interesting and fascinating process. We call it community-based design.
Yeah.
And communities are literally coming together and asking what kinds of graduates we want to produce, then asking what kinds of experiences do kids need to have if they're going to have those knowledge and skills, and then asking if we want to create those kinds of experiences, what does that mean for how we need to be spending our time? And it's a complex process. And I wish I could do a better job boiling it down and explaining it in a succinct way.
Yeah, I would imagine that the notion of reinventing school, how to get that into something people can actively wrap their head around beyond just open, wild brainstorming in the universe of possibilities kind of a thing. It's bad enough to walk into Home Depot and look at the paint aisle where there's a billion swatches and say, which one do you want to do? Or which, it, to me, that's overwhelming. I'm not good at that space. But
yes,
to even beyond that, reinventing education, it's almost like of the universe of possibilities, we know what one looks like, what one paint swatch looks like, because it's the same one that we've all had since time immemorial.
Yes.
So
yes,
we can't even say we're going to do this other thing instead. We're saying, of the universe of possibilities, it's just not going to be this one.
Yes. And of course, we believe deeply that it's the responsibility and the right of local communities to define that. But to your point, it can't just be an open-ended thing. We could go on forever just imagining everything. And so we believe very much in offering communities examples of models that others have developed that are proven with evidence to work, and then asking, how does that fit into your vision? So it's almost like if you went into Home Depot and you could see six or seven different kitchens or living room configurations and say, what do you like from this one? What do you like from this one, et cetera? And then let's stitch it together in a cohesive kind of way. That's very much a part of the process.
Yes, I'm very much a multiple choice person. My graphics designer knows, don't just say to me, Laura, what do you want for your new logo designer, for your new whatever? I don't know. Give me three or five totally different things and I'll tell you what I like and don't like about each one of them. But please don't just give me a blank slate and say, tell me what to do with this. No, that's...
Yes, it's much easier to react to something as a starting point.
Exactly. So, and that makes an elevator pitch really hard. That makes it hard to start a lot of conversations with people to give them something that's not so abstract that they still don't know what you're talking about.
Yes.
As opposed to it's a magic wand or magic beans and we're just going to poof, make something totally different come up. I would imagine it's hard to, depending on who you're talking to, you have to approach it in different ways. If we're talking to parents, if we're talking to school boards, if we're talking to, who are other stakeholders you would need to even talk to discuss this?
So when we think about a community coming together, it includes the school board, it includes the administration, like the superintendent and the people in the central office, it includes principals, it includes teachers and other building staff, it very much includes students and families, it often includes community organizations that the schools partner with, it often includes local employers, because we're very much into apprenticeships and blurring the line between school and work and different things like that. So it's that whole range of different stakeholders. One of the first things that we often do in the process is we invite them to listen to students. We borrow from design thinking. We talk about it as empathy interviewing and literally ask students a set of questions around what is their life like as a student right now? How do you spend your time? What parts of it do you like, do not like? What would you do if you could do differently? And it's amazing how many people say to us, I've never actually sat down with a student for 45 minutes and just asked them questions and just listened. And when they tell me how disconnected they feel, when they tell me how boring it really is, when they tell me how unsafe they feel in school, I cannot unhear that. Often that is enough to motivate people to say, all right, this paint swatch we've always lived with, we got to do it very differently.
Right.
The other thing that when people have time, we often challenge them to do is literally just follow the student around for a half a day or a day and see how much of their day they're just told to sit down and listen and being lectured at, et cetera. When people do that, when you really put yourself in the shoes of young people, it is just stark, and we forget how challenging the experience can be.
Yeah, we've all done a really good job of blocking it out of our memory.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
We couldn't wait to get out. Oh my goodness, that's so challenging. And tell me about a time when you had to laugh at yourself.
Well, you know, I'm writing this book about curiosity and questions and learning from other people. And one of the things I say in the book is I'm still a student of this. I'm not writing this book because I have it all figured out. And so we had a situation, you know, in my current organization where we had a project that I really felt passionate about. It was urgent, needed to get done. We had a team member who I asked to do the project and take it on. That person said no. And I jumped right to all the conclusions. This person doesn't respect me. This person's not a hard worker. This person doesn't believe in the mission. This person's not a team player. You know, all the things that would really kind of trigger me and get my blood boiling, because I'm here like, you know, pouring my blood, sweat, and tears into our mission.
Sure.
And I got really worked up about it. And I talked to my co-leader, Elon, who encouraged me to just take a breath and maybe get curious, which is the thing that I preach, of course. And once I got curious, I realized that this person was actually saying no for the exact right reason. They were doing something else that was actually more important than the thing that I wanted them to do. I hadn't considered, why might they have said no? I just jumped right up to all my conclusions. And when you violate your own advice, when you don't practice what your own preach, I think you got to laugh at yourself, because we're only human and, you know, this stuff is hard. And so that's one example.
Yes. And it's so easy to jump to those conclusions and assume, you know, fill in the blanks with all the possible reasons why this is a horrible person, why they're totally selfish and not committed to the passion and unwilling to help and lazy and all this kind of stuff. And they're going, actually, no, you asked me to do this other thing and this will serve you better. And you go, oh,
yes,
well,
exactly.
When you put it that way, I suppose it's okay that you... And of course, we're not used to saying no, and we're not used to hearing no.
And that's what I would want them to do. So then, of course, you have to get curious and say, well, what is it about me that led me to jump to that conclusion? Why would I go there as opposed to getting curious? And that's the deeper source of the learning.
Yes, yes. And I think that's an amazing place to wrap this up on, that really powerful smack you in the face point of just, okay, let's not jump to conclusions. Benefit of the doubt. Get curious, seek a bit more information before you decide how you want to respond to something that you might not like right off the bat. So tell me, Jeff, is there anything you'd like to give our audience?
Yes. Well, as part of this whole book around how to actually learn from other people, how to get curious, how to ask questions, how to listen, how to make it safe, I have developed a little quiz. Ooh. That's a self-assessment to help us all understand how good are we really at getting to the heart of what's going on for other people, at really listening to them in ways that draw out new insights, in ways that bring us closer together.
Okay.
It's a short quiz and people can find it at assessment.askapproach.com or on my website.
And of course, we'll put that in the show notes. So I think that's a lot of fun and you don't have to show anybody the results of your
quiz. That's right. It's just up to you.
Right. So if you see it and the results say, perhaps you could stand to be a little bit better of a listener. You don't have to show your significant other who's been telling you the same thing for however long. We promise we won't throw you under the bus on that one, but you never know what kind of insight you could get out of a quiz like this. So you want to say that one more time? And of course, like I said, we'll put it in the show notes, but one more time, what's the link?
assessment.askapproach.com.
Terrific. And Jeff, tell us how we can learn more about you and Transcend.
Best way to learn about Transcend is on our website, www.transcendeducation.org. All one word, transcendeducation.org. And for the book, you can learn about it at askapproach.com.
Ask Approach. And tell us one more time, the full title of the book is?
Ask, Tap into the Hidden Wisdom of People Around You for Unexpected Breakthroughs in Leadership and Life.
And we will put that in the show notes as well, along with the link. I assume it's available on Amazon?
It's available on Amazon and anywhere else.
And anywhere else. Okay, so we'll give you one of the links. You can find the rest of them on your own. I think one usually will do it. But one way or another, Jeff, I have loved this conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's been so great to speak with you. Thanks for having me.
To everybody else out there, thank you, as always, for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or your platform of choice so that we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.